This is No Direction's PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage. PaizoCon 2018 seminar coverage was made possible thanks to the support of the Roll for Combat podcast, as well as the dedication of our team of volunteers. Due to possibly questionable language, this panel is rated Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
Sorry, Ryan.
But it's going to be a good conversation.
Yeah, I think so.
Is it time?
It is time, technically.
Technically?
Technically. Are you guys ready?
Are we ready?
Ready?
Woo!
All right.
Woo-hoo!
Okay.
All right.
Cool.
Is the door closed? Yes, no?
Yeah, it is closed.
It is closed. Awesome.
All right, welcome to, I hope you're here all here for Beyond Chainmail Bikini, which is a fun title. He came up with it, I think.
Actually, I didn't.
Okay.
It was Brian Syme, I think.
Oh, okay. Brian Syme is
artist friends. Friends.
Yeah. So this panel is about sex sells.
Sex.
Right?
Sells.
Doesn't have to sell just to heterosexual men. And we're going to talk about when it is good and when it is bad. And as a quick introduction, I'm Liz Kortz. I am a full-time self-employed artist and graphic designer. I worked at Paizo for many years, and then I moved on to, you know, do my own thing in art. I could see my table at the store.
She's amazing.
And I do work for him.
Yes. And I consider it good enough to pay.
Yes.
So you yes, it's amazing. Yeah, and I'm Kristen Sowards. Contextually, I worked for Barnes & Noble and then independent bookstores for about 22 years total. I also run Lost Spheres Publishing. I've been doing that for 5 years, do Pathfinder design. And I think I originally was asked to participate in these sorts of panels because I've asked more artists than I think most people to put more clothing on their people than most people. So that's often my favorite and unfortunately too often sent back feedback on my concept art I get back. I'm like, wow, that's really cool, but no boob windows.
Yeah. And it's like, this person is a reptile humanoid. Why do they have boobs?
Yes, yes.
That's a pet peeve of mine, personally. they're reptiles. They don't need boobs.
That said, our intent here today is not to shame sex stuff. It's not that. You know, fun is fun. You know, it's more about looking at context and what's more problematic culturally.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to start off with the fact that a lot of fantasy art and sci-fi art has been definitely geared towards the heterosexual male gaze. And that is problematic for a lot of reasons, mostly because of its ubiquity and the fact that a lot of the women that are depicted are not given their own agency. And that's, I think, that is the crux of the matter, where you get to explore a bit more of examples of that, examples of how to improve that.
Can you speak up, please?
Sure, sorry. So it's day three of the convention. I'm a little, you know, rough.
Kind of looking at that, like, historically, if you kind of look at book sales, again, working, my first real job was to manage the sci-fi section of a book bookstore about almost 30 years ago, not quite.
Yeah.
Originally, though, a lot of those artists were hired, oftentimes not even having any view of the book or anything. They're hired by a marketing person, and they were hired for a lure.
Yeah.
They were supposed to draw somebody in, because sci-fi was weird and not well-known, and the demographic was challenging. People weren't even really sure who was reading it. There weren't very many cons.
Yeah, there was no demographic surveys of who was reading sci-fi at the time. Right. And as a quick idea, how many people here are artists?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I skipped that.
Awesome. How many people are writers?
Okay.
All right. How many people fall into a different category, like art director, publisher, or both?
Fan.
Yeah!
Does Muse count?
Yes, that works.
Muse?
Okay, absolutely.
I like Muse.
Muse is good.
Okay.
Does teacher count?
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Okay. So good mix.
Yeah, good mix. Awesome.
But way more artists than I expected, so that's cool, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks.
A lot of writers, too.
Well, and ladies. And, sorry.
Yeah. Yes, got to work on getting the gendered language.
Yes, right? Yes, I apologize. I was raised in Utah. You know, there's all sorts of problems linguistically with that. And
I'm from Texas.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Y'all is gender neutral.
I like that.
Okay. I too spent some time in Texas. So, all right. So, let's think of classic examples of objectification. Red Sonja.
Red Sonja, yeah. I think I might have one cover that I can pull down.
Awesome.
It's not Red Sonja, though, but Red Sonja is definitely right in there.
Great example, Red Sonja right off the bat. Although there have been some attempts to change that in recent comic issues. Any number of assortment of pinup, retro, sci-fi covers, pulp novels. I mean, there are so many, you could take your pick.
Vallejo,
Frazetta to an extent.
To an extent.
To an extent. There's so many examples, I can't list them all.
I'm hoping I can get this one particular cover.
Yeah, she's like, I gotta find it. And
so
also on an interesting flip side of the objectification look is romance novel covers. But that is objective in an entirely different way than your standard fantasy or sci-fi cover. It's still objectification, but it's presented for a woman's gaze as opposed to a male gaze. There's been a lot of discussion about how for men their fantasy is like a power fantasy, and for women's fantasies are very different, and you can see that dichotomy in a lot of the book cover art that you see. It's like this is such a broad topic. Where does one begin?
Right.
And again, this is not to shame anybody. I adore pinup art. I love it. I love all the retro, Vargas art and Olivia. I love all that stuff. But for me personally, when I'm drawing it, I add something to it that changes the expectations. Most pinup art is like there's a soft kind of innocence towards it. A lot of mine are, it's a half-orc.
right.
And she has a dagger in her garter.
But still appealing.
Appealing in an entirely different way. So for me, it's still a pinup art. It's still a beautiful woman. It's just an element of implied threat that I find appealing.
This is not going to be the most visible, but I'm going to try to blow it up as best I can here. This is the cover of Chess King. I don't know if you see it, okay? Anybody? This is a chess nerd who saves the world and gets the hot barbarian girlfriend explaining to him.
Yeah.
We all know that if this was a character, she would probably be able to bend him and break him in half. But like, there are so many issues just with the posturing in this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
She's got scoliosis.
Fair. Well, and so, do we want to go to problematic stuff from here? Or?
Yeah. We're going to start from the heterosexual male gaze. The role of women in these art is always as a prize to be won, or presented in a submissive pose, like this picture right here.
Yeah. So like she's probably actually as tall as he is.
Yeah. But she's wearing heels.
Yes, and she's lower like than he is.
Yeah.
Even though like there's no way if he's really the chess dude.
He's like 7 feet tall.
Right. Yeah.
And
submissive. Oftentimes, there's another one with a fairy and. It's very, like, vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. She's in a jar.
She's supposed to be a queen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also oftentimes depiction of persons of color.
Mm-hmm.
Taming of the Savage.
Yeah. It's a terrible, terrible trope. Don't do this.
Yes, don't ever, please. But, yeah, you know, this became part of the cultural identity of sci-fi by extension.
Mm-hmm.
And that then fed on those people, the people who had successful novels, and for a while it became kind of a franchise.
Yeah. And sci-fi and fantasy has a dirty, awful history, and we need to accept that and move beyond that.
Yeah.
And do something to correct a lot of those inequalities. And if you're a writer, you need to have somebody read your stuff that's not you, because you can have a lot of internalized bias that you're not aware of.
I think the same thing goes for your art, too.
Yes,
you know, when
absolutely.
You're doing your concept, hopefully the person who's ordering it. But, you know, it never hurts if you're doing your art order notes to be like, you know, was this, and you don't have to be like a jerk about it, was this submitted by, like, the writer or who question the origin of where the order came from. Because if it's a marketing person, you might want to even be like, hey, can I get a look at any of the material? And then sometimes they're like, no, NDA, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it's a placeholder art image, sometimes that gets ahead of the product, mm-hmm. and then it becomes part of this kind of aura mm-hmm. around it, right?
Oh, another good inequality is in art is, in this example, the woman is wearing a lot less clothing than the guy.
Yeah.
And that automatically presents you in a vulnerable position, not wearing clothing. So getting fully clothed female figures in fantasy is still rare.
Yes.
And it's terrible.
I have my MMO shot.
Oh, yes.
So this is the exact same armor in a game. And I actually was looking at this game because I thought it did a good job originally. And because they actually go the other way where the guy's armor usually is quite revealing too. Yeah. But this is the exact same armor in an MMO. Epic dragon slaying armor.
Mm-hmm.
So this keys off for me. I mean, obviously there's kind of an exploitive thing, but there's a verisimilitude problem here.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of one of the things with a lot of this exploitation, the Chess mm-hmm. King cover, mm-hmm. And that trend, you know, we were originally doing the object to lure a person, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now we're moving more towards immersion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we realize more and more about sci-fi and fantasy people is we're moving towards that. I want to step into the story. I want to be part of the story. I want to lose myself in the story. That doesn't look real.
No.
It looks dangerous and stupid.
Thank you.
One of the first things for me in fantasy is armor, right? A lot of armor. So armors, what is armor's purpose?
Protection.
That is not going to protect crap. You are literally exposing the most vulnerable part of your body.
Yeah.
And the fact that that armor goes all the way down to her pubic bone?
Yeah,
That's not protecting anything. And as an artist, you need to think about how an armor is structured and what its purpose is. And you can add the embellishments later, but first and foremost, armor is to protect. If you're doing sci-fi, then we can get into force fields and that sort of thing. But still, armor is meant to protect. That is not protecting anything. If you're going to do something that ridiculous, do it for the guys, too. How many of you have read Ogliff, the webcomic? Okay, good. Have you guys all read...
You just changed my opinion in the room, by the way.
And if you've seen a lot of the Ogliff comics, they poke a lot of fun at some of those tropes, especially in regards to armor. It's like, but I feel pretty. Again, if you're going to do something that ridiculous, do it on equal sides of things. And you know, make fun of the ridiculousness, acknowledge it if you're going to go that direction. Obviously, if you're doing a more realistic fantasy, then armor, it needs to be protecting things. Everything.
Yeah, I just did a Kickstarter last summer, and you know, one of the reasons why, again, I got kind of front of this is I bought a lot of art.
What a gorgeous art.
And I will tell you this, that like, if I saw that, because I got I get probably 2 to 3 portfolio submissions a week,
mm-hmm.
and if I look at your stuff, and you're amazing, and you have these great auras and super cool special effects, but every single female is presented in that kind of exploitive or vulnerable or nonsensical armor way,
mm-hmm.
I am not going to hire you, flat out.
Yeah.
You know, I think it perpetuates bad cultural things, obviously, but it's not realistic and it doesn't represent my brand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of ways to use sexuality, either more broadband
mm-hmm.
or subtly,
mm-hmm.
That you know are much more interesting and available to more people that don't also break that immersion, right? Mm-hmm. Especially with RPG art, I think RPGs have almost moved into that forefront of kind of pulling people into that awareness space. Because we do go there, and then mm-hmm. if you're there, you know when something feels bad, you know?
Right.
One of the things...
If all you see are people of color being attacked or being the bad guy,
yeah,
or fantasy races being are used as stand-ins for people of color,
mm-hmm.
Like orcs always having dreadlocks,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. That is what people of color are going to see. It's like, oh, I'm treated like a monster. I'm treated as inhuman. I'm treated as subhuman. So make an effort to have the heroes be a diverse cast. And it's going to sound like I'm asking you to have a checklist, and yes, I'm asking you to have a checklist. It's like it's putting yourself in this. The goal here, if you are a publisher or a writer, you are trying to attract a new audience. You want to get more people involved and invested in whatever you happen to be producing. And the way to do that is to try to appeal to a broader base. If all you're going to appeal to is the straight white male, we've had a century of that. Mm-hmm. We can do better.
Well, and it's half your market now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
easily.
Conservative statistics, you know, that I've seen are still saying 40% female attendance in most events at this point, most demographics of gaming pools. And, like, if there's exploitive art, there's problematic art, you're telling people, hey, I don't care about you as much, right? You're driving potential customers away. Mm-hmm. And then there's, you know, LGBTQ, queer, whatever. I say that, by the way, as a queer person. I'm not just saying queer, whatever, be dismissive. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, that's another big chunk of people, particularly who have oftentimes quite a bit of resource at their disposal as well.
Yeah.
It's just bad business.
Yeah, it's bad business. And also the thing to remember is a lot of people aren't necessarily, might not be reporting that they participate, because going to a convention is still very, very male dominated. And so a lot of people might not feel safe in these kind of spaces. I went to Gamer X a couple years back. It was a very queer-focused gaming convention. And letting everybody, and seeing everybody being so happy to be out and comfortable and gaming was life-changing. And it's like, I want everybody to have that moment and experience. But we're not quite there yet. And the way we can start doing that is by how we present our media that we create and consume. I am going to call out all the white guys in the room. You are actually the strongest voice, because as a queer woman, I can sit there and yell until my face is blue that I want a happy queer couple in my media. But the fact that you are a straight, possibly straight, or a white guy, your voice is more likely to actually be heard. And you have a lot of power in that, and I want you to acknowledge your privilege in that situation. So, it's like we've been saying this for years. It's like, yes, I want more queer, you know, characters in my art. But unless you actually also make an effort to say yes, we absolutely should have a queer couple who has a happy ending and is not just a vehicle for a tragedy. It's not going to change. So we all need to work together on this. How many of you are familiar with the Blue Rose role-playing game? All right.
It's kind of sad.
I haven't gotten it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's really cool.
So the Blue Rose role-playing game is incredibly queer-friendly. And the presentation of the world setting is there are queer couples being shown having a happy moment. They're like, you know, it's like they're two like half orcs like holding a child together kind of thing. Just a happy, normal, everyday thing is so good to see in a role playing game book. Talking in a lot of Paizo material, it was saying like you'll see like reading in the text saying this Lord such and such and his husband. Just reading that, it's like you pause and you go, it's pretty cool. and you carry on. When you present it as a normal, everyday thing, because it is, you are changing how you would present your book. Because in real life, we're still very much treated as an outsider. And the fact that in a fantasy world, I can escape to where I am not is also, again, a really key point in creating your art, whether it's with words or with pictures. So.
Yeah, contextually, and I might embarrass him because he's actually here right now.
Cute.
Yeah, when I met my husband, in my early 30s, I actually asked him to take a picture. He had a really nice camera to take a picture of us kissing, because outside of very sexually explicit things, I had never seen an image of two guys kissing in a romantic way ever.
In a physically intimate moment that wasn't sex.
And like. That, you know, I can't tell you what that would have meant to me to even see once, even if it was an orc or a dragon or whatever. And, you know, like, I'm not I'm not de-emphasizing the fact that that could be life-saving to someone
yeah.
who feels totally disenfranchised
yeah.
and the responsibility. You know, and it doesn't have to be on every page even, but mm-hmm. that if it even can be anywhere, mm-hmm. The service you're doing mm-hmm. towards acceptance mm-hmm. and just letting people feel even that moment of somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And also, and getting back to showing that kind of equality and presentation of, you know, queer people. Something that Paizo literally has done is gone through a turnover and counted a number of men, counted a number of women in a scenario. And if it was imbalanced, they would change the genders or change the pronouns. I mean, it literally changes nothing in the story. And actually, in some cases, might make it more interesting. If the, you know, grizzled captain of the guard is actually a woman,
right.
It's like, well, I'm suddenly really interested in her. It's like, what's her? why did Grandma go off to war?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of one more thing about a potentially technical skills side of things. Mm-hmm. If I just see your entire portfolio that's just women, mm-hmm. or... It shows me that person has a limited focus, mm-hmm. and I frequently say, okay, cool, I need a dragon. They're like, oh, I could do a dragon, and the technical skills are oftentimes just not to par, mm-hmm. particularly like they haven't studied animal anatomy. You mm-hmm. know, one of the things Brian talks about a lot, and Todd Lockwood, mm-hmm. you know, they study how cats move mm-hmm. and how, you know, reptiles scale patterns shift and things like that, and they spent all this time fascinating. Gosh, I can't remember that there was that anatomy biologist there at NorwestCon.
Was it Terrell Whitlatch?
No.
She's been at Emerald City,
but
and she's also great.
You know, they put in the time on that, and, you know, it's going to show if your portfolio is diversified, and again, you're going to have a more balanced presentation.
Yeah, go to the zoo. just go to the you know, nature documentaries category in Netflix and click play. I mean, there's so many choices. And also, in increasing your skill set as an artist or as, and I'm going to be art focused because I'm an artist, is I literally have a random generator that tells me this character, here's a character, this is what ethnicity they are, here are their facial appearances, and, you know, little personality quirks that I might be able to integrate into the illustration. So I never have the excuse of falling into, I'm going to draw a redheaded white girl. And that helps me as an artist grow so I can portray a wider variety of people. And that's never a bad thing to expand your skill set like that. It gets me out of my comfort, my default thing that I've drawn for the last 30 years. And again, showing that you can do that variety of work is a great thing to have in your portfolio. If you need a random generator to do that, find one. I mean, I have a Pinterest character folder, board that's nothing but faces and references of different cultural things and things like that.
So we want to move on to, like, solving?
How to solve it. Man.
Boy. With my company, Lost Spheres, I have really tried to pursue a very unique visual messaging look and go for alien stuff that is still very visually striking, right? And that allows you to broadly present, sexual images sometimes, but mm-hmm. usually much more subtle and, again, immersive mm-hmm. visual pieces. Mm-hmm. I think having kind of your Bible or this generator, mm-hmm. I think, sort of thing, where you have a set presentation you're looking for is a good way if you're running a company. If you're going to write, if you're talking to your publisher and they're talking cover art, guidance, mm-hmm. put together a brief of these are the sort of things I want on there. Mm-hmm.
These are the things I absolutely do not want to see.
Yep.
Same
thing, we talk about artists. Game design, you know, if you're a game designer and you're looking for that diversity, you can build it into your stat blocks. Right. You're saying the reverse monitoring. Mm-hmm. I know people in the freelancing community that all the time inform their publishers by going through their own turnover and saying, okay, I'm going to put this in here, I'm going to put this in here, I'm going to put this here. Yeah, this species, ancestry, whatever, this gender. One of the things on my Kickstarter that I really liked being able to do because I had so much control of it is every turnover I just said, okay, you know, I want you to put whatever, you know, the voice you want to put in this in. So I had people agender, I had people saying, you know, non-binary, this person's, you know, shifting, literally, like, you know, and moves between these things. And you can control that. Yeah, your publisher might push back on you. But if you start them off with a very robust, diverse turnover, the chances of them pulling that back in, and I don't want to say whitening and tightening, but, you know, that's going to be a lot harder to do without, like, violating the integrity of your entire turnover. And I hate to say it, but if a freelancer presents that, the publisher is going to probably cut as much work as they can, unless they think something's super problematic and you haven't done your due diligence. You're going to keep a lot of that diversity all the way through the whole process if you start there.
Something I would say to keep in mind up is tropes. The problem with tropes is we don't know that we're using them. until you do, and you come back a week later and you're like, oh, oops. So if you have somebody you trust to be a second set of eyes for you, if you are a publisher, start looking into diversity consultants. They will save you a lot of time and effort, and they're worth the money. Because the first step is admitting you have a problem. And sometimes we all have our unconscious biases that we project and don't know that we are. So diversity consultants are specifically there to help you identify potentially problematic areas in your media. So they're a huge assist, and there are many of them out there. You just type in diversity consultant.
Same thing goes for your writing. You can get sensitivity readers. There's a lot of great resources out there. You know, and try to look for someone who is actually going to be a sensitivity reader. Like, if you just pick somebody, like, you know, let's say, you know, you're straight or a guy and you're like, okay, I'm writing a POV who is a, you know, bisexual Latina. Don't just be like, you know, random Latin person, here, read this. You know, you can't do that. You're going to really want somebody who's going to stand back and look at that objectively and really actually find those biases.
So the thing to remember, like, if you are writing about, if you're writing or drawing something that is not you, you cannot write, it's like, I am writing the story of a black woman. You cannot tell, you don't have the necessary knowledge to write about being a black woman. If you just have a character who is a black woman, that is fine, but you don't necessarily have the all the context that goes into being a black woman necessarily. So don't make your story about being black or being a woman if you are not black or a woman. So it's recognizing where your potential weaknesses are, and either avoiding them or finding somebody to help you get it right. Because getting it wrong is so much worse. You are also going to screw up. It's inevitable.
You will screw up.
You will screw up. Because we are human. We are fallible. The thing you need to remember is take the criticism, take the hits, and correct it.
Yeah,
and
acknowledge it, apologize.
And actually work on fixing it. Not just, apologies are not enough. You actually need to act on those apologies. You actually need to do. There's so many different ways you can solve that. I don't want to get into it.
Right. We're not here to give legal or social media consultancy advice.
I do charge for that. and so we say, so in the description we talk about toxic objectification. And the biggest problem is, it's ubiquity. If you're always showing women in a submissive pose, it gets old real fast, and doesn't really provide anything I want to see anymore. So what you need to do is figure out ways to have women in positions of authority in or flip the script. It's one of my absolute favorite things to do, just because it calls out the ridiculousness of it. How many of you are familiar with the Hawkeye Initiative on Tumblr?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you're not familiar with the Hawkeye Initiative, they take a bunch of comic book poses, specifically women comic book poses, and put Hawkeye in those poses. And the boobs and butt pose, the twisted spine. It shows you how ridiculous these poses are if they're applied to a male body. And it really calls out the fact that women's bodies are contorted to things they should never, ever be able to do. Especially in comics. And by putting it into a ridiculous context, it calls out to the actual problem that you're doing. the Hawkeye Initiative is entertaining and also educational. And that's my favorite combination.
I think you've probably seen a couple things going around too.
Oh yes. Oh, I don't know.
I wanted to find the other one. Okay. I'm sure everybody has seen, but
it's the gender flipped Han Solo and Leia. and again, it's calling out how ridiculous the slave Leia outfit is when you put it on a male body. It's still hot, but again, it does call out how ridiculous some of the costumes are when you put it on a different body, and suddenly the woman becomes very powerful and strong, and the male becomes very submissive and a possession to be had rather than an actual person. And that's a key. Is when you are removing the character that you're portraying's agency, suddenly become an object, a thing, and no longer a person with their own hopes and desires and dreams. And yes, it's a challenging thing to do, but you can do it. It can be done. You can do it. I believe in you.
Getting behind gated sites, that's unfortunate.
This one's pretty good, but it's not quite as good.
Yeah.
Go back.
Oh yes, sorry.
Thank
Oops.
You. Yep.
I asked for a projector, but didn't know we got it, so yeah. I kind of feel bad. I would have.
We have AV.
Yeah. Right.
It's still a new thing, and so when we're all familiar with Star Wars, I'm hoping. So Rogue One. The main female character. Again, there's only one female character. Again. That's one of the problems with it is when you have a single person, you have a woman, she has to carry the weight of all the women ever.
The monolith.
And they have to be everything. So make it easier on yourself and have multiple women doing multiple things. When in the newer Star Wars movies, do you know how awesome it was to see female X-Wing pilots?
Yes.
It's like, if I had seen that when I was a kid, when I first saw Star Wars, man, it's like, that would have been, like, life-changing. Instead, we just have Leia. That's it. That's fine. But she's also a princess, and a general, and a senator, and, she's all these things, and she has to carry the weight of being all those things for everybody who's watching it.
Well, and I think that, goes the realism of that moment, right? It's like everybody, and I'm going to kind of pick on something much more relevant. Sioni.
The sorceress.
Now, here's the thing. Yes, still cheesecakey, but she actually has magical tattoos on her body that serve a actual magical purpose.
Yeah.
And that is so huge. It's a little thing, and yes, sure, there's still marketing, and you can still go after it for a lot of reasons. But there is at least something to fall back to when I say, well, why does she look like that? We have an actual reason. You can actually go to the Verisian tattoo feet and say, this is representative of a game. And so I would say, if you're going to do that...
If somebody's half naked, they better have a really good reason for me.
Yeah, and show it on a guy.
Yeah.
So I'll probably buy your product.
Yeah. I would too.
Sorry.
So like Crow the Blood Rager.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Crow the Blood Rager, the Shawanti, they shave their head because that's their cultural thing. He's mostly naked because, again, they live in a really hot area, so it's like, why would you wear clothes? It's hot. Yeah.
Do you not think that the idea that, like, oh, there's a reason that they're, like, half-naked ever is, like takes it too far at some points, or is, like, overused?
If you're trying to find an excuse for your art.
There's at least one, there's this video game, I don't remember what it's called, but the creators had this, like, naked woman, and they were like, oh, no, she's an alien who breathes through her skin, she needs to be.
Yeah.
And that was the lot. I think a lot of people were like, no.
Were there male aliens?
Exactly.
Yeah, I was about to say, if it was consistent. Or that would be your solve, right?
Yeah.
If you were actually going to do that. But then you're probably also going to put on your product, this is fairly explicit. And people are going to have that choice before they just get it in their face.
Yeah, there's also a lot of double standards in media. In case you may have noticed.
Really?
Yeah. Female nipples. Problem. Male nipples. Okay.
Okay.
Female frontal nudity. It's okay. Male frontal nudity. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no.
It is weird when you see male frontal nudity. It's just...
You don't expect it.
It's like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then... Bam! There's a penis on the screen. Like, oh, I was not expecting that.
It's like, okay, penis. So, and there's a movie, History of Violence, with Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah.
And he is naked and getting the shit kicked out of him.
That one's Eastern Promise.
Okay, yeah, that's it. Promise. Yeah.
The bathhouse?
Yeah, the bathhouse scene, where it's like, no, that's totally contextual, and that's fine. Again, if the female alien, if there was another male alien that was presented that was also naked, I'd have been fine with that reason. But again, when you have one person who's bearing the weight of an entire culture, entire, you know, gender, entire, you know, whatever, if they have to do all of that, it's not as believable. It's like you need the context to make these reasons we have these things believable. I'm lucky enough to have the original art for Scylla the Paladin in my house. So I get to stare at it and see all the amazing details that come into it. And seeing her armor, she's like, no, she is there to protect. She's there to defend. And I find that an amazing piece of art because we didn't really have a female, a strong female black woman in any sort of good hero role in our fantasy role-playing games for a long time. And now we do. We have Scylla, who's amazing. And then we have Amiri, who is a barbarian. She has her, you know, her stomach is bare.
And? Scarred.
And scarred. It's like, oh, she paid a price for having this bare stomach.
For having a ridiculous open stomach.
Yeah, for some stomach.
I also think if we're going to do a naked alien like that, I mean, it's a naked alien. Like, it probably shouldn't look 100% human.
Yeah.
There probably should be something about that would be a little like, oh, what's that?
Yes. Hot pops?
Well, and to go back to Amiri and Crow, they're barbarian blood raiders, so there are actually decent reasons to have both of them be half naked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Barbarians and blood raiders aren't known for making the smartest decisions.
Well, and emphasize speed and strike fast, strike true.
Yeah.
Over
that
armor
weighing you down.
You were saying before about being sensitive to critics and apologizing, changing. Mm-hmm. How, when you're trying to do that, do you ever encounter and how do you deal with people who you think are being too sensitive? Like,
where
do you find a balance between trying to fix everyone's issue with something and being reasonable?
I find the people who you think are being too sensitive are just tired of seeing it over and over again. It's a cry of frustration.
Yeah, start with your own privilege first. Yeah. Like, you know, like I get to assume that generally I am wrong, that I am not sensitive enough. I mean, yes, if you have an intense product or a possibly problematic product, put that up front.
Yep.
You know, say this is has mature themes in it, and
I would specifically call out content warnings in your material. Mm-hmm. People think it's the PC thing to do. No, it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. If you have gore, if you have scenes of violence, if you have sexual themes, be upfront about it. And as a note, don't use those things as a shock value.
Yeah,
they need to have contextual.
Or a draw.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's going to draw the exact wrong people you don't want.
And if you think that it's problematic to have somebody who's like, oh, there's someone who's, you know, showing side boob on page 7 versus someone who's like super into the fact that you killed an orc in a grisly way, you know, I tell you which fan is going to be a problem at your con 5 years later, and it's not the person who complained about the side boob.
Yeah. there's also a lot of problems in American culture with the whole sex and violence thing, where one is not okay, and the other one is, that's fine.
Fine. What are you talking about?
I see that a lot as a teacher, actually.
Yeah.
Like, I'll have my students reading a book about the genocide in Africa, and the parents are totally fine with it and everything, because it's a learning experience, but there's one blowjob scene in a book, and
because teenagers are not sexual.
No. Yeah.
But they are violent, and that's okay.
Genocide good, blowjob bad.
But.
Yeah.
Probably have a lot less genocide if there was more blowjobs.
That's the catchphrase.
Everybody had to come here for some sort of hearing comments. Right. Like that.
All right.
I forgot Ryan's recording this.
Yes! You're welcome, Ryan.
The only quote that makes it through.
Yes.
What are your thoughts? Like, have you seen or watched Westworld?
Yes. I have not yet because...
I have.
I have... My problem is when I am creating my own media, I cannot watch media I have not seen yet, because I get distracted and suddenly I'm like, and I got a schedule to keep.
So what are your thoughts on how they portrayed the nudity of the hosts in that?
I think it's actually a very alien thing. The way they present it, it's definitely that you see full frontal of everything and everyone. You also see very, very unflattering physiology, and very, so it's very huge sampling, lots of people who are actually overweight, old, wrinkled skin, you know, everything you see. Because the host experience is supposed to create realism, right? Again, we're going back to that. And, you know, gosh, that there's these people who are going there just to kill people or scalp somebody, and they want that to be like a realistic thing, and I don't want this to get too grisly, but there's some definite trigger warning worthy stuff that they do. I mean, like when they find the map on the scalp, I'll say scalp, and they do that. That was pretty intense. And, you know, I think that while there are, yes, obvious moments where there is a sexual tone to it, I would say that, generally speaking, nudity in that media is very, like, part of the immersion in that alien sense. They also don't react to it like we would.
Yeah. Also, I think this is a great segue for one of my personal pet peeves, is every time we see a nude body, it's often sexualized. And let's face it, bodies are weird. and again, I'm an artist, so I do a lot of life drawing, and you learn to become comfortable with the human body. It's just as a body. It's like, it does, just because it's naked does not mean it has to be sexual. And again, this is one of my big problems with American culture, besides the whole sex and violence thing, is we always treat being naked as a prelude to sex rather than just existing as a human, you know. And I think that if you're going to portray nudity in your media, you need to also present it as a fact, existing, rather than always a prelude to sex. Because, I mean, there's so many situations where nudity just happens. Like, I'm going to go take a bath.
Right.
You know? So, yes.
There is the caveat to that. The one exception to that is the sexy shower scene. There's no sex happening, but we only see women showering in very sexy, arched ways.
Yes. Yeah, instead of the... Yeah, you know.
No unpleasant groaning noises.
Yeah. It's like, and you can't quite reach that one spot in the back, you know. Let's talk about good media.
Good media.
Good media. My favorite one is from Iron Circus Comics, the Smut Peddler and My Monster Boyfriend series. I mean, it is pornographic. I'm going to straight up tell you that. There's no bones about it.
It's good media. It's pornographic.
And it's good because it is pornographic comics that are written by women and illustrated by women. And so it presents that media in an entirely different manner than I'm used to seeing in a lot of media. So it's good for a lot of reasons. Again, because it also portrays bodies that are naked but not necessarily sexualized. And it's like... So, yes, sometimes very unflattering. And also a lot of different body types. And also aliens, but that's fine. What other good media?
Gosh. I think I was supposed to say.
It's not enough good media.
There's not enough good media.
5 minutes.
Totally random, but it's like I'm thinking of this one scene from Starship Troopers where they're all in the shower.
Yes, yes. I love that
love that scene.
Yes.
Where it's like
where she just doesn't care.
Yeah, like, nobody cares.
They're in the same space, but it's like these people are portrayed as like well built. They're beautiful.
And well, they're soldiers too. I mean,
they're also eugenically bred, I believe.
No, not Starship Troopers.
Not that one. Okay.
Not in the movie.
Okay, fair.
So, like the book is totally different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So was that? Would you consider something like that? Pretty positive.
Yes.
And for its time,
yes.
Very positive.
Yeah. And it's actually one of the reasons I really, really love that movie, even though it has no bearing on the book whatsoever. because of the Coed Chiracy, because they were just like, dude, we've been out, you know, marching and shooting all day, wearing our battle rattle, which is an amazing phrase I love. And I was like, I want to get this dirt off. It's like, I don't care that we're all naked in a shower together. And also, in a lot of the Seattle areas, there's also the all-gender restrooms, which is becoming a big thing in the area. And I'm a huge fan of it because it's like, I just want to go to the bathroom, wash my hands. I don't care.
Yeah. You guys notice how they're always cleaner, too?
Yes.
Because everybody's taking care of us. Everybody's, like, concerned.
Anybody who's worked retail and has had to clean bathrooms.
Oh, God.
You know.
Yeah, that's a whole nother panel.
retail horror stories? Oh, God.
I was just thinking bathrooms, but okay.
Yeah, gotcha.
Anybody else got a favorite good media that they've...
Yeah.
Actually, my two nephews were just starting to watch Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I know, right. 2018.
Okay.
And my sister-in-law, their mom, was saying that they got to the sex scene with Rob and his wife,
mm-hmm.
and she was like all freaked out until she realized, wait, this is actually one of the few examples of a healthy sexual relationship.
Yeah.
And but the trigger was, it's wrong, but then again, but then it was like, oh wait, no, actually this is a positive,
mm-hmm.
you know, depiction of a sexual relationship.
Mm-hmm. It's the happy domestic couple.
But in that show, it's the anomaly.
Yeah.
I was about to say. Yeah. Okay.
That is not
thank you for saying that.
Leads to them dying.
Yeah.
True. Spoilers! Oh,
it's been long enough.
Yeah.
It is a book and
a
show now.
Yeah.
I've only seen the first like 10 episodes of the new Star Trek Discovery, so I don't know if it changes, and I think that there's some sadness that starts to happen, but the lead scientist and the lead doctor is a gay couple,
mm-hmm.
and they're so sweet together. In the first like several episodes, it's just they're happy,
mm-hmm.
they're in a committed relationship, and then at some point he starts lying to him about what's going on with his body, and then it gets a little sad, but and I, like I said, I've only seen the first 10 episodes, but it was really fun to see that couple.
Mm-hmm. On the same thing of gay couples, Steven Universe.
Yeah.
All right, there's somebody over here.
Oh, yeah. Ever seen a webcomic called The Meek?
No.
Interesting point that I just thought of. There's a character in very early chapters, young girl, 16, 17,
mm-hmm.
running around, culturally raised, does not care about wearing clothes,
mm-hmm.
And runs into, like, foresting camp. One of the first characters that runs into is like, dude, you really need to put on a shirt, and her first response is, you have bigger man boobs than I do. It's just wasn't her thing.
That's fine, but it's also kind of body shaming.
Yeah, she explains. It's explained. Why?
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. All right, there was over here.
You.
Somebody in the back, and then I'll work there.
Okay.
Well, as like armor wise, I think that Dragon Age is a 50-50 shot. At least like the later games.
I was gonna say, we're skipping over Origins, right?
you have both Hawks and like the rogue gear starting out is like they're both in like leather armor skirts. Like it's fine.
Yeah.
As soon as you get to like the queer community though,
mm-hmm.
I think that the Adventure Zone is 10 out of 10 perfect because you have really good trans representation.
Mm-hmm.
You have really good like lesbians
mm-hmm.
in general, like, and then you have like the perfect gay guys. Mm-hmm. Like, it's great.
Awesome. I'm gonna have to. I keep meaning to follow that. And somebody back here, and then you. Yes, yes.
I know.
I'm working my way forward.
I was gonna say a weird example of an evolution of it is how the comic Sinfest went from being
very dude bro,
fairly dude bro, to where at some point you realize he's like. No, and then you just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Where it is now is probably one of the more positive examples out
mm-hmm.
there. Like, it does a really good job of separating everything out,
mm-hmm.
not kink shaming, and not this shaming, and not that shaming, but pointing out the things that should be just completely flat.
Yeah, it's very heartening to see a lot of people kind of wake up and to be woke, and I hate that phrase for a lot of reasons, but seeing people grow as creators and realize, oh wow, that was really fucked up for me to do. Sorry, Ryan.
Okay. Are you familiar with the blog Repair Her Armor?
No, but I think I've heard about it.
There's a whole section where basically they take the armor plate, you know, like the boob plates and stuff, and then reimagine it as if it were actual armor that would actually protect somebody.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's
cool. You know, that, and there's a lot of examples, both like medieval armor, like real medieval armor, and just like fantasy armor when you have like the male female armor, and how do you fix this?
Okay, cool. Is there any questions? We got our 5 minute warning. Yeah.
How do you, how would be a good way to portray sexuality positively? Because, say you are portraying, someone naked, and it is meant to be a sexual scene.
Consensual. Make it consensual.
Make it consensual. Warn your audience.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah. So the biggest problem with a lot of, sex scenes as are depicted is... There's no admittance of this is a unified couple, you know, and rape is about power. It's not about sex. And if you're portraying a sex scene where one person is not willing, that's rape. So
even significant power disparity is problematic. So it's like the king and a peasant girl,
the king and the maid. That's power.
Don't make it again the prize to be won.
Yeah.
That's not.
It's make it a moment to be enjoyed together.
Yeah.
It's all about how you portray it. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to portray it, and I'm kind of like, let me think about that. I'm wandering off. Make sure that it's consensual. Make sure that it's, again, the reason I like the Smut Peddler comics is because they make a point of, in a lot of the comics, of asking permission. Can I do this? Would you like me to do this? Do you want me to leave you alone? Do you want me to say no? Making an effort to portray that, because it's very, 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 very important. Because not only does it, for a lot of women, show it's like, oh, people actually do think about this. This is actually something that people do. But also, you were giving a chance to for somebody who's reading, going like, oh, I should really do that. I should really actually be explicit in asking someone's permission to do this very intimate thing. So, yeah.
Sort of a follow-up question. What is your opinion, or are you familiar with the star show Lost Girl?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she's a succubus, so there is a power element that they've given this woman. And, it's ostensibly all of her sexual encounters are consensual, but she does have a power that makes people want to do her. Mm-hmm. So what's your opinion there? it's a problematic show for a lot of people.
That's dangerous territory, and I'd say the first thing I would do is, if you're going to really go there, I mean, first off, they do kind of put it right out in front, right?
Yeah,
they did. Yeah,
and then yeah, but I would also probably immediately get some sort of analog for a male in there, just to be kind of like, you know, this is just how these creatures are, these beings are, and don't have it just be this kind of monolithic bad.
The demon woman, monster girl,
it's like
thing.
So many succubuses, so few incubuses.
Yeah.
So sad. Anyway,
going on.
That did make me think of, does anyone know the show Lucifer?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, where it's like, because it's like that, you know, people want to have sex with him, just this animalistic lust, but it literally affects everyone around him.
Yeah.
Up until, I guess, his psychiatrist decides that she doesn't want to sleep with him anymore, which I thought was interesting, just the fact that his power wanes on that.
Yeah, and there's so many ways to do it wrong.
How do you feel they did that in Lucifer?
I don't really watch network TV, because I can't watch new media when I'm creating new media, and I'm always creating new media. So,
what do you think about, in Pathfinder, succubus is generally is portrayed in the description as a creature that seduces you and then kills you, whereas the incubus is portrayed as a creature that just rapes people. That seems kind of
the disparity between the two. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is getting better.
It's, yeah.
But yeah,
we've got a long ways to go.
And you know, I'd say that is a DNA problem for fantasy role playing.
Yeah,
probably.
I'd say there's a lot of
And newer games are stepping outside that and having female incubuses and having, you know, but yeah, I think that the original conception of those two demons in particular is very problematic.
I mean, again, there's creating an evil creature for, I'm going to make this as evil as I possibly can, and being seduced or, you know, being raped against your will is one of those, I'm going to make it evil kind of things. And it's one of those things, like, it's so easy to get wrong, and you really have to have the right group to even have that creature existing there, existing in the context of your scenario. So
it's like kind of like a shorthand for evil, isn't it? It's like, oh, they're evil, so they rape.
Yeah.
No, it's like they're evil, so the evil woman, you know, seduces men.
Yes, because seduction is so evil.
And keep in mind, sexism has no part in the role-playing game.
Yeah, no.
Why even bother with that?
Yeah. Yes, because there's no, like, the innkeeper and his wife. That's, you know, sex clearly is not
a mechanic.
Yeah, there should probably be a table discussion, you know, session zero buy-in before that ever comes up in a game.
Actually, yes. There should always be a session zero where you get out of the way. These are things I never want to see in my game ever again. And I've been very explicit about that in my games. So it's like, I never want to see rape or enforced pregnancy in my games ever again. And I've had that happen to me multiple times.
Oh.
So, always have a session zero, always get those things out of the way, and absolutely stick to them. Those are like your non-negotiables. If the group you're with doesn't want to follow them, get the hell out. I mean,
that stuff's been around, the content warnings, like, they've been around forever. Like, every time someone adds, like, a trigger warning or a new thing, it's like,
no.
HBO's had their little line since I was, like, 5 years old.
All right, so we got to get going. Thank you, everybody, for coming.
Sorry, Ryan.
Very quotable panel.
What are your thoughts on Saga?
Thank you for joining us for another PaizoCon 2018 seminar recording. Special thanks to the KDCon team, including Justin Sluder, Ryan Hiller, Stephen Glicker, and the entire Roll for Combat crew. No Direction's PaizoCon coverage would not be possible without their tireless effort. To find this and other great Pathfinder podcasts, visit nodirectionpodcast.com.